Welcome to American Dissident Voices. I'm Kevin Alfred Strom. As William Pierce warned you in 1970, and as I've been warning you for decades, multiracial societies are not healthy societies. They inevitably rend themselves to bloody pieces, killing and torturing uncounted innocents along the way. The recent events in Ferguson, Missouri, prove my point. It's about time we heeded the warnings that the National Alliance and nature are giving us, or our children will not have a future. When huge, thuggish Michael Brown, an aggressive 18-year-old black male high on drugs and fresh from a convenience store robbery in which he physically tossed aside the store manager as if he were a toy, was stopped by Ferguson police officer Darren Wilson, he was ready to fight. Initially, Wilson just stopped to ask Brown and a companion to stop walking in the middle of the road, blocking traffic. If Brown were a rational human being, he would have peacefully and instantly complied, no matter how much the order rankled him. Brown matched the description of the robber, though Wilson apparently didn't know that at first. He had the stolen goods, cigars, on his person, and was apparently even brandishing them for all to see. To challenge an officer, even verbally, under such circumstances, was profoundly stupid. To physically scuffle with the officer over a non-issue like staying on the sidewalk, when unarmed and facing two armed men with a radio that could bring immediate backup, would have been insanely stupid, even if he hadn't just risked years in prison for a handful of smokes. But that's exactly what he did. During the scuffle in which Brown's body was halfway inside the police car, Darren Wilson's gun went off, and Brown and his friend ran some distance off. The accounts diverge at that point. Some say that Brown turned around and began to charge Officer Wilson, who felt in danger for his life. Others say that Brown was already injured and merely stumbled forward after turning around. But all agree that Darren Wilson then fired several rounds into Michael Brown, killing him. Photographs of the scene immediately after the killing show Brown face down, facing the police cruiser, with blood flowing from the front of his body only. The killing of Michael Brown has set off days of protests, rioting, and looting by blacks in the Ferguson area. Initially, there was a military-style response from the police, complete with curfews, gas attacks, armored vehicles, military-style assault gear, and the like. Later, authorities instituted a softer approach and even took a hands-off attitude toward looters who were unmolested while they were filmed freely and gleefully fighting the power by breaking windows and stealing athletic shoes and electronics. A number of blacks even questioned the wisdom of that police decision. The evidence suggests to me that Officer Darren Wilson's belief that he was about to be charged by an insane and violent thug whose goal was to wrest his gun away and use it against him was a very reasonable belief. But exonerating Darren Wilson and the police in Missouri is not my goal. My goal is to show you reality, the reality that almost no one wants to face. We are placing the police officer on the street in an almost impossible position. On the one hand, he is supposed to be totally non-racist and respect the civil rights of blacks and other non-whites with especial zeal, since they are the pampered pets of the multiracialist system that rules over us. We forbid him to take any notice of race in his enforcement efforts, lest he be guilty of racial profiling. Never mind that blacks commit aggravated assault at 200 times the rate of whites. Never mind that they commit interracial rape at tens of thousands of times the rate of whites. He must never even allow the whiff of a suggestion that he uses such facts to find a perpetrator. On the other hand, no one knows more than a street-level policeman. The impulsive, explosive, unreasoning, virtually insane, violence-prone nature of a large number of low IQ, high testosterone young black males. He knows that to err on the side of civil rights, once a situation has escalated, is to invite death. He knows that life is cheap on ghetto streets and that these thugs take each other's lives by the dozens every month. He has a wife and kids and doesn't want to die. He knows well the saying that it's better to be judged by 12 than carried by 6. If he's smart and sufficiently corrupt, he knows to carry an untraceable throwdown gun at all times so he can claim his attacker was armed. He knows that fellow officers will often back up whatever story he tells because they're all part of the thin blue line, risking their lives daily keeping order among the feral class. He knows that officers sometimes have to look out for each other because no one else will if the system turns against them in a racially charged case. Street-level blacks may have a low average IQ, but they are smarter than the average white lemming in a way, because they have figured all that out, while most whites have not. And they resent it deeply. They see it as a war on young black men, some 30% of whom are in trouble with the law in one way or another, and who swell our jails and prisons by the millions. Police departments may have lowered their standards so that more blacks and other non-whites can enter their ranks, but they still do at least have some minimal requirements. And even these lowered standards and drop-dead easy tests still guarantee that white officers will usually outnumber non-white officers, even in majority black communities like Ferguson, Missouri. And it's a biological reality that no race takes well to being policed or ruled by another race. The protests in Ferguson are an expression of outrage against the killing of a single black man by a white policeman, part of a pattern that seems obvious to the blacks. But the shooting deaths of over 500 blacks in Chicago, almost all of them killed by other blacks, including 52 in a single weekend, pass with very little notice, to say nothing of protests or riots. Why the difference? I'd say it's an unconscious biological drive to throw off the rule of your people by an alien tribe, in this case, whites. The killing of one of your own by an outsider you perceive as ruling over you is an outrage that eclipses even 10,000 ordinary murders. There's one way in which blacks are vastly superior to whites. Their inborn racial consciousness is still strong, and they are not at all shy about expressing their outrage when they feel threatened and striking back at their perceived oppressor. It's about time that whites started showing some outrage against the people who are killing them and doing something intelligent about it. The oligarchs, desperate to keep the forced multiracialist system in place so that white genocide and money-making can proceed as usual, have an answer to non-white crime. And that answer is the same answer they give to the alleged terrorist threat. First, they lie. They deny there is any racial dimension to the problem. Then they strip us of our ancient rights to privacy and freedom, give the police carte blanche to do almost anything to anybody, and spend billions militarizing the police forces across the nation, effectively turning America into an occupied country. They empower the corrupt and justifiably frightened officer to kill and get away with it, even more than he did previously, fueling black resentment and violence. The friendly officer on the corner is a quaint memory of the past. Today, even the law-abiding white folks fear and dread not only the police, but any contact whatsoever with the out-of-control criminal justice system, It's jackbooted thugs, it's corrupt courts, and it's selectively enforced labyrinth of laws that no one person could even read in a dozen lifetimes. America is slowly becoming a prison camp writ large. We incarcerate more of our citizens than any nation on earth, even more than the filthiest third world dictatorships. And two huge symbiotic components of that equation are black criminal behavior and police state tyranny, which seem to increase in lockstep. What's the answer to black rage, black youth unemployment, read unemployability, and black crime? More education and midnight basketball? Give me a break. More and more prisons, more and more laws, more and more no-knock warrants, more and more militarized police on every corner, more and more surveillance, more and more checkpoints and SWAT teams? Is that the way you want to live? Is that what you want for your children? And what about the things that go with that? What about more and more interracial sex and marriage? What about fewer and fewer white children, to the point where our population plummets, we lose control to an even greater degree, and are at the mercy of those who hate us? And then, it's all over. If we lived in a white society, and I remember the 90-plus percent white America of my youth, incidents like the Michael Brown killing would be almost unknown. Almost no white people are stupid enough to do all the insane things Michael Brown did in just the last few minutes of his life. Almost no white youth ever has been crazy enough to challenge a police officer to the point of mortal combat with everything to lose and nothing to gain. But the African race has an average IQ between 70 and 80, and a huge percentage of them are below that range, literally in the retarded category by our standards. Impulsive and unreflective on average, they are dangerous, volatile, and unpredictable. Perhaps those traits, coupled with their high birth rate, conferred a survival advantage on the African savanna. Perhaps, given the freedom to naturally develop their own societies, in 100 years or centuries, they would find their own uniquely African way of solving their serious social problems. I don't claim to know, but I do know this. Their presence in our society is not compatible with our survival. Many of them want their self-determination already. America's founders were mostly of the opinion that black slaves should be freed and then separated from us with 5,000 miles of ocean in between. And many American leaders since then, even including Abraham Lincoln, agreed. So the idea has a long and honorable tradition in this land. There are some 38 million people of African descent in this country. The current national debt of the United States is $17 trillion. If we paid each and every black person in the United States $100,000 to return to Africa, that's $500,000 for a family of five, more than enough for a bountiful start there. It would only cost $3.8 trillion, less than a 23% increase. The national debt is now increasing at a rate of some $2.6 billion per day. At that rate, which we're going to spend anyway, we could pay it all back in a little over 4 measly years. And it would be even easier to separate from the mestizo invaders who are still within walking distance of their home countries. Wouldn't it be an act of mercy and deep morality to give our children their own nation again? Doesn't nature teach us, as the ecologist Garrett Hardin once said, that no two subspecies of the same species ever coexist peacefully in the same territory? Wouldn't it be the ultimate act of wisdom and kindness to ourselves and others to separate what nature has already separated by 100,000 years of evolution. The way America is going now is immoral and unsustainable. America is falling apart. There will be more riots. There will be more prisons, more laws, more killings by and of the police. Yes, they were able to put a temporary bandage on things in Ferguson by cutting out the local police and placing the highway patrol, led by a black, temporarily in charge, and having him sing hymns and denounce the local officers in black churches and on television. But we are dealing with two peoples who simply do not want to live together, and if they intend to survive, cannot live together, being forced to live together by the money men who rule over us. The same money men, members of the world's wealthiest ethnic group, who are dispossessing us all with their mass immigration and usury con game. The only question is whether we will still be around when nature reasserts herself and multiracial America disintegrates completely. We can make our survival more likely by doing everything we can now to build a new, racially healthy, and racially conscious society, and hastening the day of the rotten system's demise, hastening the day when we'll sit in a position of strength at a negotiating table from which the money men are excluded, and found a new nation in North America. As much as we may sympathize with Darren Wilson in his moment of decision, we cannot cleave to a system that is committed to multiracialism and therefore incompatible with our survival. We cannot leave this to the police. The system and its police have abandoned us. From this day forward, it's all up to us. You've been listening to American Dissident Voices, the radio program of the reconstituted National Alliance membership organization, founded by William Luther Pierce in 1970. This program is published every week at whitebiocentrism.com and nationalvanguard.org. Please write to us at National Alliance, Box 172, Laurel Bloomery, Tennessee, 37680, USA. We welcome your support, your inquiries, and your help in spreading our message of hope to our people. Once again, that address is Box 172, Laurel Bloomery, Tennessee, 37680, USA. Until next week, this is Kevin Alfred Strom reminding you to keep on thinking free.
For blood and for soil, we will work, we will toil. Heaven is born on the earth. The heroes arise as we shout to the skies. We will now have our rebirth.